So if I may, let's begin with Partha, and I'm going to ask as my first question about the economics profession, of which Partha is a distinguished representative, overlooking nature. Because your review is really about bringing nature back into economics. Why has nature been overlooked by economists for so long? Why has it proved so difficult to incorporate into conventional economic models? And do you think that now, following your work and work of other economists, at last we are going to have economic analysis that includes a proper value of nature and diversity?
Well, starting from the end, David, I hope very much so. That's for sure. But your main question was about why is this missing? And it's very hard for me to explain, but let me have a whack, which is that ecology is a relatively new subject discipline. Good textbooks have been available only for the last few decades, not much more. That's point number one. Point number two, people don't see the signals from nature that easily. We are making use of nature's goods and services all the time. Our lives depend on it. It's hard to record them. And particularly, they're not recorded because they're not converted into prices. The market doesn't function for a variety of reasons that it goes into. So it's easy to overlook it. And it's not just economists who overlook it, nature. Pretty much everybody overlooks nature, if you think about it. But I think there's no intrinsic reason why ecology is a hard subject to graft into economics and blend it within economics. And the review tries and do that.
Thank you very much. I remember a wonderful little piece of analysis on the pollinating function of bees, which ended up concluding that a bee was a flying $100 bill, which was a very crude an attempt to summarize the fact that it carried out a very valuable function. You have this powerful concept in your report of inclusive wealth, moving from flows to stocks and moving from gross to net. Would you like to take us through the power of your concept of inclusive wealth, please?
It's a really very intuitive notion, and I think private companies have no difficulty doing that because they have balance sheets. So nations don't have balance sheets. We've got into a habit of estimating flows like GDP, which is income. It's so many dollars per year, you see. That's the first weakness, because we do need an inventory of things, objects, durable goods. And we want to know, if we want to discuss sustainable development, for example, you need to know the assets that you are handing over to the following year and in comparison to the assets that you inherited the previous year, okay? So that's for sure. That's not the hard bit, that we want to go in for stocks. But the other problem with GDP, the flow, is that it doesn't take into account the depreciation of capital, which is something that if you studied stocks would automatically handle, because you'd be asking, is the stock of X more or less than what it was last year? And if it's not, why not? And somebody says, oh, it's depreciated. Say a wetland has deteriorated. So inclusive wealth is nothing other than a confirmation of the fact that what you're trying to measure is an inventory of your goods. And of course, if you can price them, the value, social worth of those objects, then you add the values and that would be your wealth. So it's like a household determining its own wealth. Here's a nation determining its wealth and how it passes on from year to year. That's inclusive wealth, and it's inclusive for two reasons. We use the word inclusive for two reasons. One is that you're using social prices, not necessarily market prices, for the reason that I've alluded to in the answer to your first question, namely, much of nature doesn't have a price in the market. And the other is that it includes natural capital, nature, not just produced capital and human capital, like education and health. You include the whole bundle of ecosystems that you've inherited.
And do you envisage that the concept of inclusive wealth, are you optimistic that it is going to become part of the framework of an economic analysis used by the British Treasury and in other finance ministries, and how will it sit alongside GDP? How do you see that shaping up in the future?
Well, first of all, I think the first question, yes, that's the one thing I'm optimistic about, because it's almost inevitable that it will happen, largely because it's got a very strong theoretical backing. I mean, the foundations are absolutely solid. It's not a question of my opinion versus your opinion. It's a mathematical theorem that if you want to discuss welfare or well-being, then you really ought to be looking at assets, the stocks, on the basis of which our lives depend. So that's for sure. It's happening slowly. Several countries are adopting it. The UK is quite advanced in it, actually. You have this sort of natural capital committee. You're not actually estimating inclusive wealth, but you're trying to estimate a component of it, a part of it, the bits of natural capital. And that's a very good start. And nobody's saying you should add everything up and have a wealth account. You really keep it separate because it's very hard to judge the relative values. The inclusive wealth is essentially an ideal. And in practice, you're going to cut corners and have. China is moving in that direction. So there are quite a number of countries which are engaged in it. It's inevitable. How will it sit with GDP? I think it'll sit very comfortably because these two measures are designed to serve different purposes. GDP was invented to give it sense of the extent of economic activity in a year, let us say. For short-run macroeconomic management, it's invaluable, and it will remain so. Where we make the mistake is to use that index to discuss economic success over the long run. That's a big mistake.
Right. Yes, thanks. Thanks very much. And then just bring us on to your report's proposals and the broad transitions that you think we need to now engage on to as we properly value nature. Just take us through those transitions and how you see them being playing out.
Well, these transitions that we mentioned are really not addressing the same point. The first one we highlight is that, and that's absolutely crucial, it's the bedrock of the whole review. The finding from the earth sciences, from ecologists, as well as some economists, that our total demand, humanity's demand for nature's goods and services vastly exceeds nature's capacity, ability to supply it on a sustainable basis, okay? And we're managing it by eroding nature, depreciating it, which connects with the earlier points I've made. So the first thing is to address that. It's that we're really in, this is a firefighting situation and all finesse is to be avoided. You really have to find ways to cut down this gap to zero. If sustainable development means anything, it has to make it zero. Two, as not really addressing that, but for the longer while, we really need to move into an asset management view of nature so that their entire language we use for economic analysis brings nature absolutely central to economic decision-making. And inclusive wealth is just one part of that. It's really essentially a language difference, and we really need to recalculate, re-estimate, and re-study our performance through that. And the third is really the changing of institutions which will support these two activities. And the institutional changes are large in number, and I'll just mention three just to give you a sense, and then you can, at the local level, it's very important not only to think about the global level, because all of us as citizens are living in local surroundings and our activities are confined to that. So at the local level, I would say for urban areas, one of the key recommendations is we really have to go for gardening, much more green space. It's good for our health, quite apart from the fact that it rejuvenates nature in the local environment. At the national level, one of the first things we ought to be doing is to remove subsidies for nature. In fact, nature is not only zero priced, as I was suggesting, free, it's negative price because we subsidize its use. We're paying ourselves to degrade nature. That needs to be removed. And a third is a long shot, but it's something that I really have tried to boost in the review at the international level. It's high time we have an international institution created like the World Bank and the IMF, but with charged with managing, monitoring and managing the global commons, like the open oceans, the atmosphere, instead of leaving it to essentially the open, the seas are, of course, free to use for fishing or transportation. And this could be an institution which could raise vast sums of money and save the ocean, protect the oceans, and could be used for a variety of other purposes.
Very illuminating, very helpful. Thank you very much indeed.